There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, let's go semi-live, slightly delayed, a little bit earlier to the Mobile City Council meeting and the bad audio, and roll it.
Thank you, Mrs. Ritz. With no further discussion, there's been a motion and a second. All in favor?
Uh-huh.
All opposed?
Opposed.
The item passes 6-1. Welcome to the city of Mobile.
All right, so that is that was the go-ahead vote for Darby Creek to enter the city of Mobile, to be annexed in. And that is part of what we'll talk about in hour number two of Midday Mobile today, as Mobile City Council rolls out the whys and what fors and all that kind of stuff about annexation. Of course, it's way bigger of a subject than just the Darby Creek neighborhood in West Mobile. It has a lot to do with demographics for the city, has a lot to do with dollars, and it has a lot to do with rolling back of fire and police protection for that police jurisdiction area to the west of the city of Mobile. We'll get into that and talk about what I thought was interesting. The of course, I'm always going to focus on the one thing that's different, and the member of the city council that voted no, you heard right there, and some of the reasoning for voting no I thought was pretty interesting. Hopefully we'll also get some of the folks that were there at the meeting, because I watched the city council meeting. But once again, the only audio worse than what comes out of Montgomery is what comes out of Mobile City Council and their live stream. It just... Can we do something, City of Mobile and members of the council, if you're out and listening now, in our local schools, maybe there could be a audiovisual. Remember back in the day, they'd roll that cart into the room? Remember, you'd have like audiovisual in school. They'd roll the cart with the old cathode ray TV and cathode ray tube TV on down the hall, and it would come in. They would come in and plug it in, and then you'd watch whatever Jeremiah Denton movie or whatever we're going to watch that day at school. Remember that? Can we get somebody from the schools that does audiovisual? Maybe it's an opportunity for the children to learn, and they could go down and mic up and learn how to get the audio feed from the Mobile City Council meeting. A video feed as well, right? Because it's live on YouTube. They put it up. So could we get some schools involved the same way we have training programs like for aerospace? Maybe we could do something for audiovisual, and part of their curriculum could be getting things to sound just a skosh better from the city council meeting. Just an idea. Well, throw that out there. If you're looking at programs for Mobile County Public Schools, maybe that would be a good program to do. It would serve the city, and also the kids would learn as they did that. All right. So just, yes, I will volunteer to go down for like one council meeting, set things up, work through that with the kids, and then turn it over to them. Okay? So I'm in on that. So hopefully we can do a little bit better down there on the audio. But we'll get into some of that chopped up audio coming up in the second hour of the show. And yeah, talk about the bigger story about annexation and the city of Mobile. This is something that is not brand new. It's been done before. Difference here is not a retail center to go with it. This is just a straight-up neighborhood. And you heard the other day when Mobile City Councilman John Williams was talking with us how that is probably not going to happen with great routine, because they need the retail anchor to make it worth the city's while to bring in the neighborhoods. All right. A couple stats I want to roll through here. This hour, Jeff Poor from WVNN and Breitbart and Lanyap and Yellowhammer is going to join us in just a few minutes. But I want to run through a couple of stories here real quickly. Number one is a survey, stats out today. Rasmussen reports the presidential tracking poll for today shows, if you're a Democrat right now, one of the umpteen that have announced that they're running, this has got to concern you some. Rasmussen reports presidential tracking poll shows 53% of likely U.S. voters. Okay, so this is not Democrats, Republicans, likely U.S. voters. That would be the people you'd want to pitch to, right, if you want to be elected. 53% approve of President Trump's job performance. 45% disapprove. The others, I don't know what's up with them. Latest figures include 37% who strongly approve of the job Trump is doing and 36% who strongly disapprove. There's your dry concrete. That is the Trump loyalists no matter what and the Trump haters no matter what. That 37 and 36%, which is, you know, significant. People that are absolutely dyed in the wool on this. Gives the approval index rating of +1. That's not great. That's not great. But what's great is, for the president, I would imagine, is looking at the likely U.S. voters, 53% of them give him a thumbs up in job approval. To get a sense of, and this comes from Rasmussen reports, it says to get a sense of longer-term job approval trends for the president, Rasmussen report compiles the tracking data on a full month-by-month basis. Daily tracking results are collected via telephone surveys of 500 likely voters per night and reported on a 3-day rolling average basis to reach those who have abandoned traditional telephone line. Okay, there's their methodology. But there it is. So that's at least for today good news for President Trump, who is, of course, starting another firestorm, or at least dealing with a firestorm in Washington. So that was on my list. I wanted to get that through, because I will get into in hour number two what I think might be at least a little local firestorm for President Trump as he's talking about the EU tariffs, everything from cheese to wine to airplanes, and in this case, Airbus. The focus on this. So we'll talk about this, what those tariffs could mean for, you know, what is a very big deal here in the city of Mobile. Speaking of the city of Mobile, I saw this too, and I need your help, okay? Mobilians, you got to get on this. The folks over at Ranker.com have a list of the most underrated city in America, underrated cities. And I'll put the link up here in a second. And it is excluding the big cities like New York and Los Angeles or whatever. But according to Ranker, they're trying to figure out what the most underrated city in the United States is. Minneapolis right now taking the top spot, followed by Pittsburgh, which Pittsburgh, great city. Charleston, South Carolina, another great city on there. Savannah, Georgia, never been. Heard great things about Savannah. Asheville, North Carolina on that list in the top five as well, which is a really cool place. Unless you have to go tour through every room in the Biltmore. Other than that, Asheville is cool, too. So that's the top five right now. City of Mobile at 88. Now, we got to do a little better here, you know, because I only get to vote once. Okay, only get the one vote, and then they ping your IP address, and then you can't vote again. So I'll put this link up. If you go to Ranker.com, if you just want to go on your own, go to Ranker.com and look for most underrated city in the United States. And there we go. Now I'll put it up. I'll tell you what, Dalton, and I'll share that on the Facebook page too, where people can check it out. But America's most underrated cities, and if you can, you can get in there and vote on that and help City of Mobile on that. All right, coming right back, Jeff Poor is going to join us. A lot of things to talk about in state news today. Some of the stories a day or two old. Some of the stories brand new. One of the brand new stories: the spin and win. Do you call them casinos? What do you call these places? You know what I'm talking about? Their bingo parlor-esque paramutual things. Well, it got raided. Spin and Win Charity Bingo Hall in Graysville up in Jefferson County was raided by the AG's office. We'll find out more on this when we get back. This could play into some lotto talk. We'll see what Jeff's opinion is on that.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5. Had a lot of text about what I was talking about in the beginning there. And Jace, we'll get to that in hour number two. I would point out, if you want to go back and check out the podcast of when Mobile City Councilman John Williams was on with us yesterday, in no uncertain terms, because I'm sorry, y'all, Jay says in the text to me, but Mobile will deny all day they don't gerrymander city limits to include commercial as much as possible without costly residents. You got a ray of sunshine yesterday, because Councilman John Williams basically said exactly that in that interview, and we'll talk more about that coming up in hour number two. This hour, our buddy Jeff Poor from Lanyap and Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and of course the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville, joining us to talk about a handful of things. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sean.
It's always a good time, and I got to get your take on this. There was a bus today. It's like we're traveling back in time. Says officials raided at least two bingo halls in Northwest Jefferson County on Tuesday morning. Officials from the Alabama Attorney General's office raided the Spin It and Win It Charity Bingo Hall in Graysville. Charity Bingo Hall in Graysville. Halls located off Main Street and Park West Shopping Center. There are also another raid at the gambling hall in Brighton. Even though you're up in Huntsville, you are a Birmingham area guy. Are those way out in the country, or where are those compared to Birmingham?
Brighton's sort of between Bessemer and Birmingham. If you've ever been down that way, head toward Tuscaloosa. It's in those neighborhoods around, right before you get into Bessemer is Brighton. Graysville's on out toward Jasper, which is a little further out into the country. But no, these aren't I would say, rural places by any means. They're maybe suburban at best. Brighton's kind of a blighted community in the Western Jefferson County area there. But Graysville, not so much. It's like kind of almost before you get out in the country on your way to Jasper.
Okay, so those raids today, while I say it, you know, reminds me of days gone by. This is not the first time we've talked about raids on, whether you call them gambling, casino, charity bingo halls. It's all semantics to me. These raids done by the state. I mean, this is something that was done under former attorney generals and has been done again today.
Yeah, and my guess is that the way this sort of happened, you got a new sheriff in Jefferson County, and they wanted to set a precedent, not that this could like really get out of hand and spiral out of control, and you start seeing bingo halls kind of sprout up everywhere all over the state. And I think what they wanted to do was, rather than create that environment where if you could get in good with the local sheriff's department, and I believe there was some kind of family connection there with the brother of the sheriff or something with the Graysville location, that they had to crack down on it just to keep it from proliferating.
So were these two that they talked about, do you know if these two charity bingo halls they talked about here are these legal? Were they legal yesterday and now they're illegal? Did something change?
It's an interpretation of the law, is my understanding. That it goes back to the whole game of skill and game of chance. And where they are legal, there are bingo halls in Alabama that exist. But I think it's a matter of interpretation of the law and really what passes muster and what doesn't.
Yeah, why didn't they interpret it differently, you know, last Thursday? That's kind of, you know, what gets me on it. And I wonder about this, because in talking about to go from something that's in Jefferson County, but it has the state, obviously, with the Attorney General's office involved, to the discussion in Montgomery going on in the legislature and what seemed to be dueling lotto bills. You have the Albritton bill and the McClendon bill. McClendon bill has the beneficiary being these paramutual betting, the legacy, I know they're not all Milton McGregor, but the legacy McGregor facilities and those that are not on tribal lands. And then you have the Albritton bill that seems to, because they say it's a clean bill, would prevent them from doing something with a digital lottery and therefore is better for the Porch Creeks. Am I okay in that interpretation of the two bills?
Yeah, I think so. The fear is that if you pass a lottery and you don't do something to incentivize the dog tracks to come along with it, that by giving them these virtual lottery terminals or whatever you want to call them, then those places are just going to dry up and end because people won't go there. It'll go by scratch-offs or something, right?
Right.
The Porch Creeks don't want the dog tracks out of that because that cuts into their... obviously, that cuts into their... I don't know if it's fair to call it a monopoly, but it would probably cut into their business somewhat. So that's the problem there. Look, I've said this on my show, and then I probably think you probably believe the same. The reason we don't have a lottery in this state, it's not because people in Alabama are morally object to gambling. It's because you got to make all these little parties happy with whatever you pass. And until we get to that point, we're not going to get a lottery. What needs to happen, I think, is they need to sit down with these dog track guys. They need to sit down with the Porch Creeks and say, what will it take to get a lottery done? Otherwise, the legislature is just incapable of passing the provision to give the lottery a vote to the people.
You don't think so? Do you believe there's any connection between the Jefferson County raids and that debate going on in the legislature, or do you think it's coincidence?
There may be on the periphery, just because you don't want the state of Alabama, or at least Steve Marshall, the Attorney General's office, doesn't want to set that precedent and wants the legislature to figure out what kind of gaming is legal and isn't. But I don't think they're directly connected at all.
Yeah, I'm going to try to answer that question. I've got, they said they were booked today, and I'm booked tomorrow, but hopefully the AG's on with us on Thursday, and we can find out more on that. All right, so that's one of my questions from up in your neck of the woods. Also, another question, and you can people can go back and check it out through your links and on the website. You talked to Terry Collins the other day, and this is a bill that we've talked about, the Alabama abortion bill, that has people talking here in the state, but also nationally, because this would be... the purpose of this bill is to challenge Roe versus Wade. Am I correct in saying that?
Right. So what would happen is the legislature would pass a law outlawing abortion in Alabama, and then naturally the Planned Parenthoods and the ACLU and other groups, maybe even SPLC, would challenge the law in federal court. And the hope is it would work its way up from the district court to the Circuit Court of Appeals, and then ultimately all the way up to the Supreme Court. And if not overturn Roe v. Wade, at least get them to address it in a different way. There are several other bills in other states that are competing with this bill to be that, but that's really what's going on here. I don't think it's necessarily a serious effort to ban abortion in the state of Alabama.
So, there are bills other places looking to do just that. It's interesting, though, because this is the judicial branch and not the legislative, it's going to have to ask a very specific question, don't you think, for the Supreme Court to take it up, or could it be general?
No, it's specific in that they went after the tenets of Roe v. Wade with this bill, according to Terry Collins. Like, they went through the decision and the justification for the decision and targeted those specific aspects of it with the hopes that it would be challenged in the federal courts.
All right. I want to get your take here, and people can see some of your take on Twitter, but the announcement, it was rumored last week. It was announced officially over the weekend. Former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville in for Senate 2020. Tubbs 2020, man.
He's got, I guess, as good a shot as anybody. And here's the problem with Alabama politics. We can talk about candidates, you and I, and we kind of know what part of the state they're from. And I'll just give you an example. When Mo Brooks ran in 2017, he just never caught on in Southwest Alabama. Maybe the same applies for Bradley Byrne. Can he catch on up here in the Tennessee Valley? It's a very tribal and regional state, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have candidates that have statewide name ID. And I'll go back to 2017 again, and I think a lot of that is the reason that Roy Moore won that nomination in that cycle was because people just knew who he was. They recognized him over Luther Strange and Mo Brooks and Tripp Hitman and all the other candidates in that race. And that's why you got to think Tommy Tuberville is known from the Shoals all the way down to Dothan and all points in between, that he is going to get some votes, and that may be enough just to get him in a runoff situation. Once you get in the runoff, I think it's at minimum for him a 50-50 jump ball.
Who does he take away from? What lane is he in?
So this is the big question. Right now, there's a Bradley Byrne, Del Marsh lane that presumably it's the Country Club establishment Republicans. The Mo Brooks, Gary Palverlane is the Tea Party ideologues. We don't have a Trump Make America Great Again guy. And that is the lane that Tuberville is trying to get. He's trying to be the populist. That's why I think Spicer is backing him. Sean Spicer, a former secretary, is backing him. And here's the thing I'd say about that. This isn't just Tommy Tuberville on a Saturday afternoon thing. You know what'd be cool? I think I want to run for United States Senate. I'm going to put it on Twitter. Now, somebody is pushing him to do this, and the sign that that's the case is that Sean Spicer is involved with his campaign. I talked to some people. I believe Tripp Skipper is involved with it down there in your area. I'm just talking to some people that they're kind of familiar with the campaign. Expect him to formally make an announcement and do the announcement rally here in the next couple of weeks, is what I'm told. They're not quite there yet. They're still kind of putting together the team. But that's what I'm hearing about the Tommy Tuberville 2020 campaign.
All right, coming right back, more with Jeff Poor. You can check him out, of course, every afternoon, Jeff Poor Show. That's on WVNN in Huntsville. Work, of course, in Lanyap. Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. The guy is everywhere. And keep an eye on Alabama politics and national politics. And we'll get right back to it right after this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, I see the text, a lot of people talking about the football effect working against Tuberville. I don't know, Jeff, what do you think? You think that's a big enough deal? People would, maybe in a primary, but in a general, would a Republican not vote or vote for somebody else other than the Republican because of football allegiances?
Well, here's what I caution folks saying because of football allegiances. And the college football head coaching fraternity is a pretty tight one. I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't see some, I don't think, you know, Saban will stay out of it, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised if you saw some coaches from Alabama's past get on board the Tuberville bandwagon. I mean, they get it. They're in this for a living. This is how they do livelihoods, and they sort of work with each other now. When they're facing off, yeah, sure, it's a combative situation, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if he won over some coaches from the Alabama side, and that sort of softened the blow of the whole Alabama-Auburn argument.
Huh. Okay. It's not going to be boring, for sure, with Tuberville in the mix. What about Roy Moore? Is Roy Moore – I mean, he hadn't said no.
He hasn't said no, and he's looking at it. I've talked to him. What I think they're waiting on is this Lee Corfman lawsuit. So Lee Corfman has a lawsuit against Roy Moore, just to catch your listeners up, about defamation because he called her a liar, and this was all out of the allegations of the sexual misconduct. So she sued him for defamation. He's trying to get that lawsuit dropped. He's trying to get a judge to dismiss the suit. If that happens, and I think at any point over the next maybe year, then I would expect him to get into this race, and I don't think that he'll be – I can't see him get any higher than 8-9% in the polls, but I do think the national media will descend upon Alabama in a way to make it seem like he's a serious threat.
Speaking of Senate 2020, I was out at the Alabama Policy Institute event last week down here in Mobile, and Speaker, of course, former Senator Sessions. I know former AG, but I'm sticking with Senator. Former Senator Sessions speaking, and – he didn't say anything to that end, but a lot of people that are way higher up the ladder in food chain than I am seem to think that he is not going to get in, that even though he has not officially said no, he's not getting in.
Well, the caveat is if Roy Moore gets in, it looks like Roy Moore has a chance at winning the nomination. Then I think people would say, look, you've got to do this for the country, for the party. You're the only guy that can beat Roy Moore. That would clear the decks. And Jeff Sessions, that would probably thrust him into the Republican nomination to face Doug Jones.
What about, okay, so that would bring him in. Anybody else? We had the flash in the pan from Matt Gaetz last week. What did you think about that? I didn't even get to talk to you about that when Matt Gaetz, or at least somebody in his office, toyed with the idea of moving into Alabama to run 2020.
There's a lot of weird things going on with the Senate race, and I think the smart people in politics realize to win in Alabama, you've got to have some statewide name ID. People got to know who you are. I don't know that Matt Gaetz has a lot of statewide name ID, but he may have a little bit more than somebody like Gary Palmer or Del Marsh,
yep,
because he's on Fox News all the time. There was a poll a couple of weeks ago with the former Miss America from 1994, Heather Whitestone, about her being put in the mix, and she pulled better than some of these guys we were talking about. So what I think is going on there, I do think that there's maybe a poll floating around out there, and somebody just stuck Matt Gaetz in there, and it turned out he did pretty well because his media market, he shares one with Mobile, and then the rest of the state might just know him from CNN and Fox News.
You're saying that, and I think there's truth to what you're saying, but to go back, somebody who is not from here, not from Alabama, because they're on national cable news and that the state doesn't cover state politics very well, that person's more familiar to Alabamians than somebody inside their own state. Heck, somebody who is Senate President pro tem.
I think so. And I talk to, like, relatives, and, you know, they could barely tell you who their congressman is. They are more interested in what Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and Sean Hannity did last night on TV, and they could tell you about all the pundits and all the news readers on that channel, but they cannot tell you who their congressman is, and they can't tell you who their state legislators are. So I do think there's a degree of truth to that for a lot of people, and that for a guy like Matt Gaetz, who isn't even in Alabama, it does seem to would give him a little bit of at least a head start if he were to do it. Now, obviously, he's not going to do it, but I do think there was some polling out there, somebody just messing around, just trying to see, what if we throw Matt Gaetz in here, what happens? What if we throw in Heather Whitestone, what happens? And they go through these names, and that's kind of what leads to these news stories.
Stranger things have happened. Let's talk about money in this Senate race as well. As last week, the Byrne campaign released, I think that they had raised, I don't have the number in front of me, but maybe $1.5, $1.6 million in the first quarter of 2019, giving them a total war chest of $2.1 million. I know that number, that final number, that's pretty heady.
Yeah, and Bradley Byrne is doing everything right. He knows that. I think a lot of people in the Montgomery bubble look at him as the bridesmaid of Alabama politics. They don't take him as seriously as they should, but he sees that if he wants to be U.S. Senator, the best game plan he has is to run that campaign, raise a bunch of money to maybe scare some people off, and get out there and start making his way around the state and showing up at these meetings all over the state and get known outside of his district. For a guy on paper like Bradley Byrne, he is doing exactly what he needs to do to be the nominee. Will it be good enough? That's the question. But if he has to, like, looking at this, what is going to give him the best chance to win, he is doing exactly that.
Yeah, and he is, while I've said the other day to folks, maybe it seems quiet around here, that he hadn't, although he's been on with us in the last couple of weeks, he is busy. He is on up there, places like Huntsville and Birmingham and elsewhere, right?
Yeah, he's been on my show a couple of times, three times. Mm-hmm. He's been on Dell's show. He's been on Matt Murphy's show in Birmingham. He's really hitting it hard. He was in Coleman on Saturday for a Republican event. He did the Huntsville Men's Breakfast Club here a couple of Saturdays ago. He's spending a lot of time in this part of the state. There's no doubt about it. So he's probably spending not as much time down in Baldwin and Mobile counties. I think he's trying to get out and around the state and get better known in these other precincts.
Yeah, the analog would be to that, y'all. If Congressman Mo Brooks decides to get in officially for Senate 2020, the same thing will be true. He will be on the air here about every other day trying to get the name recognized. What do you think about that? Is Mo Brooks going to get in?
I think he is. And the reason I say that now, I don't have any insider information or anything, but my suspicion is that he will, because he sees his congressional seat maybe getting lost in the 2020 census. And if that happens, then what's this political play next? Now there's a Senate seat up in 2022 with Richard Shelby. But we have no reason to believe Richard Shelby is going to walk away from his Senate seat. He's been saying it for 20 years. Why risk it? Go ahead and run now, and then maybe you can take another shot in 2022. But I think that's the reason to think that Mo Brooks will get in this race. He's already kind of hitting out there. That he's got backing, that he's got the Club for Growth potentially backing him, and that he can raise a bunch of money. So, he may be it's a whole different race right now with Tommy Tuberville in the mix, but there's still a lane out there for that conservative, ideologically conservative candidate.
Well, it is just interesting to hear you say, you know, it's a different mix with Tommy Tuberville. I mean, with a different race with Tommy Tuberville in the mix. I think you're right. It's just weird hearing it said out loud. You know, it's strange. I think 2020 Senate 2020 is going to be interesting, to say the least. All right, before we wrap up, I want to get your take on Attorney General Marshall's response here to Hubbard, to the former Speaker of the House here. What is your take on that? I mean, it seemed like a pretty strong rebuke here of any kind of idea that Hubbard should get out of this, right? He's seeking that reprieve from the Alabama State Supreme Court, and the Attorney General's office fired back yesterday.
I think at this point, there's a lot of people that are just thinking that maybe it's time to go serve your time. You know, if Mike Hubbard had gone to jail...
Yeah, he's still not... Tell folks that. He's still not gone to jail, correct?
Right. If he had gone to jail immediately after his conviction and after his sentencing, then he would almost be out now. But the Court of Appeals sat on this case forever. I think like 2 years or something just outrageous. And they finally ruled that they were upholding all the counts except for one or two, and it was based on a technicality or something. So at this point, maybe Marshall sees this as just kind of a waste of time and resources to have to go through this ordeal, knowing that the Supreme Court is not likely to overturn this. And I think that's maybe where those remarks were sort of coming from.
All right. See more on this going forward, but I mean, that is, I've said it a couple times, but it's good to hear you say it as well, because when I've said it, not even here on the radio, but just being around people, I'll say, you know, and they said something about Hubbard, and I said, well, he still hadn't gone to jail. They said, nah, he's been in jail for like a year now. I said, no, he hasn't. No.
He has not been to jail. He's still doing he owns some radio stations at Auburn.
Yep.
And he still does, he still DJs, like on Saturday mornings, I believe.
I wonder if they'll set up a remote broadcast booth for him if he goes, you know, does start serving his time. If he can, you know, Lord knows he can get everything else into Alabama prisons. Maybe he can help finance the governor's plan here for the prison workaround.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you, I'd probably be trying to put it off as long as I could, too, if I were in his shoes.
Yeah, I'd wait for the prisons to get, you know, maybe a new facility or something like that.
Yeah, do what you got to do, because we all know about the Department of Justice and what's going on there.
Yeah,
it's not a good situation at all.
That's for sure. Jeff, remind folks if they want to reach out and read what you're writing or listen to you, all the different places they can interact.
You can come to the clearinghouse for everything I'm doing is twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
All right, and we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right, looking forward to it.
Absolutely, me too. Jeff Poor will join us again tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings in the 8 o'clock hour. So be ready for that. Lots more talk with him. All right, coming back, we'll take some calls. I got some texts coming in. That is coming up in the next hour. Oh, Darby, welcome a new neighborhood into the city of Mobile. What is the big play here? What about annexation? What about tax bases? It's all coming up.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Oh, Dalton, I don't know if it popped up on your Facebook. I saw this is the station. No, this is my personal. The 10th annual Crawfish in the Courtyard, hosted by Gulf Coast Exporium Science Center. That just popped up on my Facebook here. That's coming up Tuesday, April 23rd from 6 to 9 p.m. Remember, this is that big crawfish event. And it benefits the Gulf Coast Exporium Science Center. Help local kids go to camp there at the Exporium. I think it's a great think it's a great event. I'm a big fan of the Exporium. I'm a big fan of what they do. So take that into account. I'm supportive of all that. I'm all on board. So you can separate that from the next part of this. Dalton, I have not been asked to compete this year. I have not been asked. And I know maybe some changes with who was running this operation down there for their crawfish in the courtyard. But, you know, each year they've had this media crawfish eating contest where they have TV and radio and print people come in and compete for who can beat the most crawfish in a certain period of time. I have gotten no notice of invitation, even though I am, what's it, I've been doing it three years? 3 or 4 years defending champion on that. Okay? Since I've been invited, I have not lost. No notice from the people for their crawfish in the courtyard for anything for, hey, Sean, be planning to be there. We'd love to see you there. The event is April 23rd. We'd love to make sure you know our schedule, what time you got to be here, who you might be competing against in the media crawfish eating. Nothing.
And what makes this more sad is you've been training. You've been training for months. You've been fasting.
How expensive it is to train eating crawfish? Earlier this season.
Pretty expensive.
It is horrible. And I'm going to write that off on my taxes, too, by the way.
Well, you have to.
But just joking, IRS. But I've got nothing. No message through social media, no email. I receive no notice. Unless they have dropped the media crawfish eating contest.
But you don't even, I mean, you win the media contest every week. If they're going to keep the contest, you should be in any contest.
I would say, wouldn't by the de facto rules, what the Robert's rules of order of eating contest, as a defending champion now for 3 years, I think?
Three years running, yeah.
Wouldn't I get the go-ahead? Wouldn't I get the invite?
You would think so. And I know you've been fasting, so you're taking this pretty difficult. It just seems like they're running scared. It's almost like they've annexed you from the crawfish festival.
They've unannexed me.
Unannexed.
So I don't, once again, love the event, and also it's put on by the Exporium Junior Advisory Board at the Exporium, and I still want you to go to the event, Crawfish in the Courtyard, because number one, I love the Exporium. Number two, I love the fact that they make summer camp for kids in our area available through this charity for those kids to go to the Exporium. I'm like all in, and I'm all aboard all that stuff. But my exception is, nothing. Y'all don't write. You don't send a letter. No one asking me to come back and defend my crawfish.
Do we need to organize a protest? Not protesting the charity, but protesting that you've been shunned.
I think so.
Maybe come up with some rhymes so that we can chant during our protest.
Yeah, that's right. If you're protesting, you have to have some kind of rhyme.
Yeah, something fun.
All right, crawfish.
I'll work on that right now.
Okay, you do that, and y'all, that's the man you'll talk to when you call 343-0106. That's Dalton. Go to the phones, and Norm is in Mobile. Hey, Norm. Norm, you there? Have I lost Norm? I don't know what happened. Dalton, I don't know what's going on here. Well, that's not Norm. Well, let's try it again. And Norm in Mobile. Nope. I don't know. Maybe the crawfish people have done something here to eliminate my ability to talk to Norm. Maybe they're upset with me on that. I don't know. It just seems suspect that all the messages are going out that they're crawfish in the courtyard happening April 23rd on a Tuesday. It's all on. Everything's a go. But no word about anything here for media crawfish eating contest. Let's try to go to Tim in Somerdale. Tim?
Hey, good afternoon. I just wanted to throw my name in the hat, and I would love to compete with you for eating some crawfish anywhere, anytime. All I have to do is bring my appetite.
You've thrown the cayenne pepper covered gauntlet down here.
Oh, I've got Mexican in my body, so I can eat the crawfish just about whole. Hey, let me ask you a technique without giving too much away. When you snap the head and you grab the tail with your teeth, do you squeeze the tail to get it out, or do you go one layer of legs off before you squeeze the tail?
No, I give away a little bit, but yeah, I squeeze at the base of the tail in one motion as my teeth are taking the meat out.
Okay, so we would compete very good. Okay.
And right. I sometimes, to show off, go ahead and suck the heads, even though the rest of them aren't doing it, because I just show it off.
Well, Yeah, you need medium. Something to help it wash it down. You got that right. Okay,
yeah. Yep. So yeah.
Let me know when you're ready.
Okay.
Tim, I'll call you anytime.
All right, Dalton. Let's get to we'll get to Tim. You can leave your contact info, and we'll try to figure out some of it. Hey, Tim, I may have some time open in my schedule on Tuesday, April 23rd. Because it doesn't look like anything here that I'll probably still go by and buy a ticket, because once again I like what they're doing, and I like the beneficiary of the Crawfish in the Courtyard event. I think it's really cool. I love the Exporium. I like the idea that kids who are less fortunate in our community get to go to the Exporium for summer camp. I think that's good. But yeah, I mean, it looks like I won't be competing. So Tim, you and I can just, maybe we'll just stand outside on the, we'll stand there on government somewhere with some crawfish and have our eating contest right there. All right, coming back in hour number two of the show, a couple things to get into it. I mentioned it with the annexation talk here for the city of Mobile. We will talk to John Sharp about that. Also a story, John Sharp with AL.com. Also, I want to talk to John. He has a story up over the last hour here at AL.com about tariffs, as President Trump is, he says here, taking aim at Airbus, threatens $11.2 billion in EU tariffs. So the president now talking about, hey, okay, we're gonna work this tariff deal back the other way with the EU. And a lot of people, a lot of news groups have been talking about wine and cheese and all that. But one of the big parts of this is economic advantages the EU has given Airbus, and the president wants to push back against it. What does that mean for jobs right here in Mobile? That's what we care about, right? We'll come back with that coming up next right here on Midday Mobile.